It's a good 10 minutes. Our YouTube exclusive for the Ryan Russillo Show. A couple thoughts. We'll have a Magic Minute with Cerruti, which was a disastrous performance last night from the Magic. We'll get some emails as well. I went to the Clippers last night because Wembanyama was in town. I think if Wembanyama is 25 minutes from your home, you have to stop what you're doing. You got to tell your wife, you got to tell your kids, you got to tell your boss, like, hey, Wembanyama's here. I want to go watch him. So, interesting game. By the time I get to my seat, it was 17-3 Clippers. No Kawhi. I think that's four straight Clippers games I've gone to with no Kawhi. I'm not sure. So, I need to double check that. Was a little disappointed because I wanted to see him. I wanted to see him in those matchups against Wembanyama. There's arguments that I've seen a little bit, like Wembanyama. Would he defend Kawhi? I don't know that you'd want to have Wembanyama chasing anyone on the perimeter around screens, like as the primary defensive assignment there. There's also some stuff about Kawhi. Is this the best we've ever seen? I think there's some offensive arguments of what this guy is doing right now, but I still think Pete Kawhi is 10 years ago. And I just refuse the idea that this guy is better than that guy when you factor in what he was capable of doing defensively, which is a nice little transition here because, you know, when Wembanyama is drafted, it's the no-brainer, but you're like, is this going to work? And what we've learned about him is that not only is he a specimen, the skill that goes with it, and then also the mindset of that he wants to be out there and he wants to kill everybody. It's just the perfect marriage. It's unbelievable that this guy gets it so soon. And he's everything you'd want in the face of your franchise. And it just feels like there's a lot of parallels with Steph Curry, not only the gravity and how much him being out there freaks out every other player, and then how much his teammates will benefit from that gravity and attention and all those different things. And then also the nonsense factor of knowing you just, it appears, again, he's very young here, but it appears that this is going to be somebody that's not going to add stress to your organization just because he's special at basketball. Whenever we were doing Wembanyama draft stuff, and then earlier, even the rookie year, kind of the ups and downs and some of it offensively, you know, I know that I think we all do this. Like when we start thinking about like who can be the best player in the world, who can have that belt, because I think that stuff's just fun. And certainly he's top five at this point. I'd expect he gets a bunch of MVP votes, but you also have to like look at it, what we prioritize in basketball. Because like when I think about Hakeem Olajuwon, who I think is criminally underrated, you're just never really allowed to say like he's a top five player, because I think we're ultimately like more attracted to the Jordans, the LeBrons, even a Kobe, because of what they can do when it's like, hey, we need a bucket. And I still wonder what that possession will look like, say game seven, Western Conference Finals, 101-101, a minute left, and the Spurs aren't just going to throw it down to him in the post. They didn't even do it now, really. They may give him an elbow touch. They may run him off a screen from the corner to see if it's loose. They may run some pick and roll where they're trying to get two against one, where the center is sitting there trying to contain the ball and then also get back to somehow contest a lob to Wemby, which is basically impossible unless the angle's off on the whole thing. So even though there are times where I'm like, I still don't know what that possession is going to look like, it may not necessarily matter because he has an impact on the game that's probably as great as anybody. Not saying he's the best player in the world, but when he's on the floor, it's just different. And I'll go back to that Charlotte game that I was watching here at HQ back this weekend. And then I watched it on Synergy again this morning because Charlotte was so disinterested in anything having to do with the paint once Wembanyama was in there. Diabate, who I like, he had a possession against Wembanyama in the first half where he got rejected and then got mad, because you get mad when you get rejected. And he was so determined to go back at Wembanyama. I don't even know that he cared that the shot had any chance of going in. He just wanted to get the shot off clean. Like that was his goal in that possession. Gets blocked, gets the ball back, goes right back into Wembanyama and throws something like you would do hour 10 in a cubicle of like, can I throw it over my head, over this cubicle, into the other cubicle, into the garbage? Like, will the shot go in? No, it probably won't. That's what the shot attempt looked like. So I was on Synergy this morning, and this is a game where Wemby had 32, 12, 8, and 4 blocks. I was tracking the second half. I just did the second half because that's when it really seemed to stand out to me, and I wanted to double check what the numbers were. Because whatever the plus minus is, whatever the blocks are, whatever his rim protection rate, and there's some charts out there, they're just like he's in his own stratosphere now. But it is those Wemby influence decisions. We still have, I've said U-turn, I've said hesitation. I don't know that any of us have really trademarked it perfectly yet. I'm not bragging that I think any of those are necessarily all that creative, But looking at the opposing offense and then realizing how many times there's a Wembanyama influenced decision where they go, I don't want anything to do with that. In just the second half possessions, I counted 25 decisions from Charlotte offensively where they were 25 times the guy with the ball or whatever pass or whatever shot selection that they took. It was because they were like, I don't want anything to do with him. The Diabate play that I mentioned in the first half, there was another play where Bridges was wide open at the three-point line. So it's a wide open three, so it's still a good three, two versus three and all that kind of stuff. But knowing Bridges and Wembanyama's like standing in the restricted area, and that was his assignment. So he's like 25 feet away from him. And Bridges goes, I'm not even going to bother dribbling to like the elbow or pull up because Bridges against almost any other center in that situation, it is a hard drive. And at the very least, I'm going to be fouled because I have all the momentum and he's a big, strong athlete. And instead, it's like, no, I'll just take this three. There was a Grant three that he took from almost 30 feet out. Grant Williams comes off the screen to the left side and Wemby's not totally dropped because he's kind of playing both. And Grant's figuring this might be the best shot that I have. And it's 30 feet, me off a ball screen. This might be the best decision because if I hesitate, he's going to get even closer and he might even block the shot. There was another Grant play where Grant dribbles left side of the paint. Wembanyama's there and he just turns around. Like not a, I'm trying to work you on an angle and then get you to react to me. It was just like, nah, I'm not going to do this. It was like walking in a restaurant, seeing somebody you hate and going, I don't even want to talk to this person. Just turns right around. And then that whole thing gets clogged up that leads to a jump ball. So in... I have the number here. In 14 minutes and 46 seconds that he was on the floor in the second half. So he's obviously not playing the full 24 of a second half. He plays 14 plus minutes, just under 15 minutes. I counted 25 times that Charlotte was like, no, because of that guy. And yeah, there's still, even watching it live last night, I was like, offensively, you know, could they do something with him that's a little bit different? Will it just be like, are you going to run a screen for him at the 3-point line and he can maybe one dribble and two steps and get to the paint from the 3-point line? But is that going to be the best look with all that kind of traffic? Is he just going to pull up from three? His passing is terrific. So there may even be some stuff with him offensively where I'll go like, it's not going to look like a Kobe going, hey, clear out. This is me. But the fact that I'm even wondering, like at 7'4", maybe 7'5", again, it's just a credit to his skill. There was a play last night defensively, or excuse me, it was an offense. It was an offense where they ran Wemby into a switch where Garland ends up with Wembanyama just below the 3-point line. So the Clippers had clearly talked about what they wanted to do defensively against the strategy. And so Garland is thinking, all right, if he rolls hard here, there might be a lob open. They don't seem to want to just, there's even a couple moments last night where it's like, you probably could just get him on the block here and throw it down to him. Because they're both teams are running out some small lineups. The Spurs are also doing this kind of small lineup where it was Champagne, Barnes at times, Keldon Johnson, and then pick whichever other guards that you want to go with between Vassell, Fox, Castle. Castle had a play in the first half against Lopez that was ridiculous. Castle's deceleration thing, it screws up everybody on defense. So he either makes the layup after a hard drive or he goes to the free throw line. So Garland, they had talked about this clearly because they knew if this ends up with Garland rolling with Wembanyama, that's not what we want if we're the Clippers. Figure out a way to bring in the closest corner to Wembanyama for a bigger defender. And then Garland, you get out to the other corner just to contest whatever shooter you have at the three-point line. And right now, that might even be Carter Bryant, the rookie out of Arizona, who, watching it live, like, I think he's going to be awesome. And so in this play, because of Wembanyama, who doesn't even get a look on the pass, because either San Antonio knew what they were doing defensively or he was just so open because Clippers were, like, shuffling things around, trying to avoid a Wembanyama-Garland matchup, Garland has to chase all the way out to the left corner, ends up fouling the three-point shooter free throws. And Wembanyama was nothing more than a guy that rolled. He didn't even necessarily have to roll that hard in the entire play. So there was something else that I was thinking about as I was watching OKC in San Antonio. And this may be like, I don't know, slow day It doesn't feel slow right now, but which roster would you rather have, San Antonio's or OKC's? I understand the Wembanyama choice because of him, but I also think that there's so much injury insurance because of the depth of what OKC is. Although in a year, maybe that depth will look a little bit closer because once again, we know Vassell's terrific. Keldon's had a great year. Castle looks like the real deal. Fox, I think, is cooking a little bit more. And I think the Carter Bryant pick, like, they nailed it again. And we had Brian Windhorst on when there was all the excitement about Giannis. And you're kind of like, if OKC had lost last year, would they have been more motivated to, like, raise the price to bring in Giannis? And that's assuming a lot. One is that Giannis just fixed everything that you need to have fixed. It's also assuming that everyone values Giannis maybe as much as we do, knowing that it's like, hey, this guy's ended up hurt at the end of the year, multiple years. So why is that just going to get better? Maybe it does. Maybe it's a bad stretch. And then he closes in a really healthy way for the next 3 or 4 years because it's kind of like a 3 or 4 year decision. But you're like, man, you know, if you had to do this, maybe a couple of these picks, a couple of the juicier ones, like, doesn't that make sense? I actually don't think Presti would do that. I don't think that's the way he operates, because he's such a fan of everything that he's drafted. And draft picks are a lot like home purchases. Like, when you go to list the home that you bought however many years ago, you decided this is the place you wanted to live. Now, granted, finances can impact like what your options are. But say it's a house that you were excited to move into, but things change, job, whatever, 5 years later, maybe you even want to upgrade. And then you go to the realtor and you're like, listed at this price. And they're like, that price is too high. And it's like, well, of course, like, to realtors, every homeowner's the worst because they're overvaluing their property, but it's the property they decided that they wanted to buy and then live in and maybe even raise a family. Draft picks are the same way. Think of all the players that you watch and evaluate over the course of the year for each draft class. Figure you're watching 100 plus players, like really locking into 100 plus players, and then you've got to pick at like 40 something, and then you pick that guy. Well, of course you value him more than maybe everybody else does because you're the team that picked him. So I don't know if it's Presti valuing his picks or his players more than other GMs would, but could you really argue with them? It looks like they have 13 guys that they have to figure out how to get. Well, they don't have to get them all playoff minutes, but they have the option of 13 different guys. And so back to the Windhorst thing where he was like, they wouldn't trade Castle for Giannis. They wouldn't trade Castle for anybody. And you're like, Castle? Like, he's good, but like, are you serious? And as this season has played out, it's starting to make me think that whatever patience, and you could say, well, hey, now that OKC won it, they're not under the same amount of pressure. I just don't think Presti would have done it. The more I think about him, the way he operates, like, I don't know that he would ever want to go all in on something that's still pretty risky, understanding the salary part of it, and then going, okay, this is, I just maybe closed the length of the window here. And then on the San Antonio side of it, you go, yeah, we actually love all of our players. We love all of our draft picks. And they were right about Castle. They're right about Vassell. I think they're going to be right about Carter Bryant on top of everything else. And it's like, yeah, okay, sure. Like, maybe that makes us, our ceiling is raised that much this year. And sure, selfishly, as a basketball fan, I'd love to see Giannis and Wembanyama in the same uniform just to see what the fuck that would look like. Because it might be like the worst team to ever have to drive the ball on in the history of the game. It reminds me a little bit in like 07 when I was super Red Sox fan and I was upset that the Red Sox wouldn't trade John Lester for Johan Santana. Santana had just come off, I think, his second Cy Young in 3 years. I think he won in 2006 and 2004. And Lester was finishing up his first two seasons, 22, 23 years old. They weren't remarkable by any stretch of his imagination, but he was a big lefty. He was super young. But you're like, look, just go get the best pitcher in the American League. Like, what's the debate here? And at the time, there was a lot of conversation around it. And I was kind of like, I don't know. Like, if you can go get the best guy going right now, doesn't it make sense? And he's still only 27. It's not like you're trading for the 31-year-old guy. And the Red Sox are like, no, we like Lester. And they were right. They were right in a big way. Santana went downhill pretty quickly. And Lester was a big part of a couple World Series and, you know, ran it for a long time. And was just a huge innings guy. Not to say like every time you don't trade the prospect for the established guy that that's always going to be the right thing, because that'd be foolish, because I can come up with tons of examples of the time where you should have done it and you overvalued your own guy. But, you know, thinking about OKC and San Antonio's roster, like which one you'd rather have in the next 5 years, the fact that it's even a debate is a credit to San Antonio. And the lack of momentum on either of those organizations really being like, as much as we speculate about Giannis and his fit with either of those teams, my guess would be both teams are like, yeah, we're good. We're good. And we love what we have. And obviously, both of those front offices are right. Before we get to some questions, we got to bring in Cerruti for a little magic minute. Red hot Atlanta Hawks. I think best defense in the NBA since the All-Star break. Are they 10-1 now, too, or 11-1? I'll look up some of these things right now. But red hot Hawks, Powell had been playing better, really excited about it. And I'll say the first possession from the Magic, it gets clogged up. They get it to Paolo in the left corner, three-point line. He's dicking around. And I'm like, please just don't take a three there. Don't settle for a three here. And he did. It was terrible. They were so bad last night. And I know the final score was 12 points, but I have some thoughts. But the floor is yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was sitting on my couch being like, don't shoot, don't shoot, don't do this. There were so many times last night where even like in the mid-range, like, Paolo, don't. They're begging you to shoot that shot and you're doing it. Having said that,
okay,
it wasn't a great game. Going to admit that. Totally fine. They had 1-7 straight before that. Paolo had been excellent, basically, in that entire stretch. I think they're 10-3 since 10-4 now since the All-Star break. But and he'd been efficient, too. And they were kind of figuring things out. The Hawks just kind of have their number, man. Like, there's a very weird thing in the division because the Magic are 5-0 against the Heat this year. Which, by the way, that's the first time, I believe, second time in 30 years that a team has gone 5-0 in the regular season against another team. They just kind of own the Heat. They have in recent history. There were some Heat announcers getting a little chirpy about it. But, hey, man, it is what it is. The Magic are just better than you right now. And the Hawks are better than us. Whenever we play the Hawks, I think we're 0-3 this year. We have one more against them this year. They match up well. They've got a lot of wings. They frustrate Paolo. You know, obviously, we don't have Franz. It was kind of a bummer. They didn't have a ton of rim protection, which kind of annoyed me.
Don't have Franz. Like, everybody gets it.
No, I know, in that game specifically, they didn't have a ton of rim protection and they just weren't getting to the hoop. Like, other than Bane, like, you know, everybody else is kind of just like settling. It's like, dude, no one's in there. Like, go attack. And that's, I don't know. It's hard for me to criticize Paolo. It's hard for me to criticize Paolo, though, because I don't know if you saw, there was like a Mark Spears, I guess he had an interview with him where Paolo was like, really, he's basically like, I saw what I put on tape early in the season. It wasn't good enough. He could have made a bunch of excuses and didn't, and just said it was on him for not playing well. And then from that point on, he was really good. So we could pile on Paolo for being bad again, yada, yada, but he's been good. And I'm the sky is not falling. The concern for me with the Magic is the schedule is kind of brutal the rest of the season, but the schedule is also really brutal for the Heat, the Hawks. I think even Toronto. So it's going to kind of be weird who gets that 5-6 seed in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah. Who would you rather play, the Knicks or the Cavs?
So we had this, I asked you this on the phone the other day. And, you know, of course, it's going to be like clipped off famous last words. This is after the Magic beat the Cavs. I think I'd rather play the Knicks. I'm a little less afraid of the Knicks because, again, like, they've got two guys who you could just kind of attack defensively repeatedly in the playoffs. The Magic have been okay against the Cavs in recent history. Obviously, they lost the playoff series in 7 a couple years ago. I think they'd have a chance against either, but I think I'd slightly like to play the Knicks. But, you know, they're not going to be favored in either of those series for sure.
I think I was just really frustrated because Atlanta's red hot. And just to go over a couple of these numbers, because it's just super easy to lose track of.
It was supposed to be Magic City night, too. So maybe that was just a huge letdown spot for them. They were excited about the Magic City thing, and then it didn't happen. So.
And Cornette didn't play last night, so who knows? Maybe Bear Elegance was pissed off at him.
Right.
Atlanta's 11-1, best record in the NBA since the All-Star break. San Antonio's 12-2. Their defensive rating is 104.7, which is a full point better than OKC's. So that's the best in the NBA. Their net rating is plus 13, which is better than even San Antonio and Miami, by the way. I like Miami again now. I've said it. I thought that was a really good win by Orlando. You know, it was a little dicey there at the end, but they looked like they were in control of that game. But there's like 7 now with Miami where I go, you know what? This is not an easy team. This is a harder out. So I've kind of fluctuated in my levels of like, I don't care, boring, because I did think it was boring for a little while. But the effort part from Orlando just pissed me off because it's like, this is a big spot. You know, Atlanta's had this run. There's no reason to like go into this being like, oh, this is this bad Atlanta team that's below 500 like they were for a good chunk of the year. But you should have been up for that game. It's a national broadcast and everything else. And it's like, there's an offensive rebound. Wendell Carter just stops playing and lets Okongwu finish it at the rim. And that was all Wendell just being like, I'm not going to do anything. There's a loose ball where Dyson Daniels reaches around Paolo because Paolo's just expecting to go out of bounds. And Dyson continues to play the entire possession. Paolo, when it's not going great, he floats. There was another play. And I think Da Silva is probably the most, he and Bane are the most consistent competitors.
Oh, when they're out there, their five-man lineups, most of the best ones have Da Silva in them. So
Da Silva's terrific, which is another, it's like, hey, another player that we like on Orlando, and yet this is still this underwhelming team. But there's a straight line drive where Dyson just goes right past him in a way where you're like, are you guys, do you guys not want to play tonight? Like, what is it? And so you can look at the final score and say that it's 12. That game was ugly. It was, there was a glaring difference for a night of like, what's that?
It was almost non-competitive from like the middle of the first quarter to basically like the fourth quarter.
Exactly.
It wasn't even competitive in the fourth quarter. I wouldn't argue any of that. All concerns, I would, you know, period, new sentence. I just think the Hawks thing, can we run through who they played in this stretch?
Yeah,
how many winning teams do you think that they beat?
Two?
Yes, last night was the second one. They beat the Sixers and they beat the Magic. They have, it's Nets, Wizards, Blazers, Bucks, Sixers, Mavs, Nets, Bucks, Magic. So listen, the Magic lost them last night. They looked like ass. I'm not going to defend that at all. But in the last, in that same time period, the Magic beat the Clippers, the Lakers, both in LA. They beat the Timberwolves. I know everyone's down on the Timberwolves, so that was kind of like the beginning of their downfall. That was in Minnesota. They beat the Cavs and they beat the Heat. So like, it was a bad performance by the Magic, but like, I'm not, it was one game, and I think we're getting a little too excited about the Hawks, and we're a little bit too like, I'm annoyed with the Magic too, but I think things have been better for the better course of like 2 to 3 months now, and that's what I'm happy about.
I was happy with the way they've been playing the last couple of weeks. I was happy about Paolo again. Nationally broadcast game, Atlanta, Lakers. The history. You know, but maybe the Hawks showed up because of Luke Kornet. Maybe it was like, fuck him.
It feels like Alexander Walker kills him all the time too.
He killed him. He had like, I think he had 26 like 2 minutes into the into the second half. Into the first half would be a lot of points.
So, anyway.
All right.
Not a fun
emails.
Minute, but let's do it. All right, we got three good ones here. Let's start with this. I know this is from Amar. I know you and Suri talked about this before the season when it was still, I guess, a debate, but when did the SGA Luka debate officially end? Will it ever be a debate again, or has SGA just entered a completely different stratosphere than you could ever anticipate Luka reaching?
Stratosphere, I think, is inaccurate. They're in the same whatever that is. They are. I mean, I think in a way,
tier one players. You're saying,
yeah. I think there's.
So you'd put Luka, SGA, Jokic, and Wemby in tier one.
Yeah, I think Giannis still.
Giannis, okay.
Is part of that. So I think it's those five, and I feel like it's Jokic and SGA. You know, with a slight gap, but then again, I just spent another 15 minutes glazing Wembanyama. So I think his impact on the game is right there with anybody else, but there's just still something, there's something to be said of like, hey, can you get us in a really good look? And I trust SGA and Jokic to do that more than anybody else. But I think that's one of the things, even with Luka's deficiencies, it's like, okay, but like when you need a bucket, and you could even argue you'd rather Luka than anybody. Like just absolutely have to have it, get a bucket all on your own. Luka might be the right choice over everyone else in the league. And maybe the points per shot and isolation stuff. Cause I also think he settles. I think he makes worse decisions at the bottom end of his offensive decisions than SGA does. And certainly Jokic does. But whenever this, he surpassed him. I think Luka also is like, he does it to himself a little bit because it can be so enjoyable on the wrong night. And then you start getting pissed at him for valid reasons, because again, it could be just a tough watch. But then I think that's starting to leak into a lack of appreciation of like what the high end version of him is. Like that Denver game, where you're just like, oh, okay. Like you're just going to kind of do whatever you want. Although shout out to Hillbilly Bogey and Austin Reeves for just, you know, how many guys would be like, hey, go miss the free throw? I think he missed the free throw on the wrong side. Look, when Luka beats SGA in 24, Luka still has whatever that, like no one at that point's like SGA is better than Luka. So it has to have been over the course of Luka being hurt 25, then being traded So I think the absence of Luka combined with SGA MVP, it's probably right around the trade. So I don't know, 14 months ago.
This is going to sound as a diss, but it's actually kind of a compliment. For a small market team, when did OKC have so many propaganda people on social media? Have you noticed this?
I have noticed it, yes.
It's kind of nuts. Like, and I'm like, am I just being, is this just bots? But I don't think they're all bots. I mean, I don't know. I like to think I'm somewhat savvy on the internet, but like, it feels like there is this big, no, SGA is this dude. And I don't know if it's just because he didn't get the credit last year for the MVP or the finals. I don't know if there's still like some lingering disrespect for him. I don't have any disrespect for him. I like him a lot. But there does feel like there's this weird push still to like put him to just keep pushing the SGA narrative that I almost see completely the opposite for Luka. So I don't know if there's the Lakers fans and whatever that is, they need to get on board on the same page together and start getting the propaganda machine together. Cause I'm kind of with you. Like, I think they're in the same, region. And what I would say is 2 years ago when Luka, you know, brings that Mavs team to a finals, do you think SGA could do that? Like, do I think OKC is worse with Luka on the team? Like, do I think they are incapable of winning the finals? No, I think that about a lot of players too, by the way. Like, I think if you put, you know, Denver, if you put Jokic on that team, if you put Wemby on that team, if you put any of those tier one players on OKC, I think they win the title last year. And that's not even a diss to SGA because he was awesome and he was certainly awesome. With that 20-point, you know, what, 127-point 20-game streak, which, by the way, is the most SGA record of all time. He's the most consistent of all these superstars. Like, he just never has bad games. And that's maybe why you would take him over someone like Luka. But Luka's highs are probably higher because that two-year-ago run with the Mavs, I don't know that I'd bank on Luka, on SGA replicating that.
He was bad against Minnesota. He had a bad game. I mean, that's a bad game by his standards, but yeah, he still gets to the 20 points. Like, if you want to go get the 20 points and you have the ball in your hands every single time, not to say that you're supposed to do it 130 straight games here, but it was pretty clear he was going to get those 20. If you want to do the hypothetical of like replacing SGA with Luka, I think they're closer than what the perception feels of the two guys right now, but there's something about SGA that he's totally fine with everybody else eating around him. And I mean, to have a star that's totally fine just making sure like everybody else is getting good looks, even though he knows he's going to get his shots and he's going to get his free throw attempts and all that stuff. And we're also talking about like two of the most rewarded guys from an officiating standpoint. So like any Luka and SGA fans yelling at each other about who gets more bullshit fouls, I'd argue Luka probably gets a few more bullshit fouls than even SGA does, but whatever. I don't even feel like getting into all that stuff.
I think I would take SGA. Like, if you're asked to be like, next 5 years, if I have to have one.
Oh, you're doing an age out thing? It's not even a conversation. It's not even a, because like, look, as great as Luka is, there's times where I look at him in 26 and then I'll pull up a clip from 3 years ago and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Mm-hmm. So if you're doing a projecting out, I don't know why anyone would take Luka over SGA.
But I think I'm saying it more of like, I would just like, I'd bank on the consistency of SGA more than I would the wild card of Luka, really. Even though the wild card could potentially win you a championship on his own. Yeah, Lakers fans, you need to get on the propaganda.
I think the Lakers fans have enough voices out there.
They just still back Kobe. That's really all it is. They're not backing Luka, they're backing Kobe.
They back Luka more than they back LeBron.
Yeah.
Like, I see way more stuff out there now, like, especially with them being the three seed. And it's like, hey, how come Luka's not MVP? I've seen a little bit of that stuff. But I do have a segment brewing in my head of, like, how OKC not really doing anything became quickly unlikable to so many people in basketball. And I'm not talking about, like, front offices or any of that kind of stuff. I'm talking about, like, just... And for those of you that are not engaged in social media in a way that I wish I wasn't, but it's just what it is. It's part of the job. Sarita and I admit, like, we're online too much. So if you're just sampling, doing a little taster of what's out there online, there is a ton of, like, I'm so sick of OKC stuff, which may have been the OKC machine's fault. It could be just a reaction to some of the OKC stuff that, again, if I were if I were giving you cliff notes on the segment that I've had in my head that I just don't know that I necessarily want to do because I respect the whole organization so much and the way they built the roster and the coach and Presti and everything. Like, there's just so many more positives. And you just sit there and get into like, hey, this was kind of stupid or this was a bad tweet or whatever. But it may have started with like the Westbrook push of appreciating what was a fraudulent statistical season and then him winning MVP and then acting like this is this awesome thing. When I think years removed, you're like, that might have actually been gross.
We just didn't know.
Yeah, I think that might have been when it started, at least for me. You know, so I'm not in charge of everybody as I try to remind the audience.
This is a good segue because I think the Lakers are one of these teams. This is from Tyler. Ryan,
the creator?
No, unfortunately. What NBA team is benefiting the most from winflation this season? In other words, which team's record looks better than it should because they've been feasting on tanking teams? I think there's two.
Okay.
I think it's throw it out there. I think it's the Lakers and the Raptors. Again, that's not even. I'm not even trying to be disrespectful, but if you just look at like the records, like they murder bad teams. That's why I took the Raptors in our alliance the other day because they typically beat bad teams and lose to good teams.
Yeah, but the Pelicans are good now.
Right. Well, we have this has always been a pro Pelicans podcast, so I should have known.
Yeah, chasing that 11 seed right now, one game out.
Are they?
They are. I just imagine being in the Hawks front office, and you just go like, maybe it's just it was so unfair. It was so unfair that this had to happen. If I do the expanded standings thing, which I always think is just really important to do before the season starts. Like Toronto's 21-5 against teams below 500.
And they're 11 games under. No, is it 11 games? How old are they?
The Spurs are 21-6 against teams below 500. The Lakers are 25-5. So that's 30 games as opposed to 27. You know, sometimes the scheduling too of like who's playing and it's like, hey, we're an above 500 team or below 500 team. It's like, yeah, but this team played everybody else. I've already done my Lakers segment of like, I can't believe they're 18 games over 500. You know, they beat Houston last night. I mean, if they're going to take both of them from Houston over 3 days in that spot, like maybe. I mean, who's to say that they can't? And so whatever doubts I've had about the Lakers and consistently going like, I can't believe throughout everything, and other teams are dealing with their own lineup challenges as well. Like, I can't believe the record is that good. I can't believe that they're the 3 seed. And yet, the more I can sit there and doubt what their prospects are in the playoffs. Again, this is Monday's podcast. Go through, you like Houston right now? You like Denver right now? You like Minnesota right now? You know, Phoenix without Brooks. Tough loss for him last night in Beantown. So I think your Raptors call is really good. And you also have to kind of look at like remaining schedule to fully answer this and go like, who's going to eat here the rest of the way? Because San Antonio has 14 games left. And they've got the Pacers, the Kings, the Mavs, the Grizzlies, the Bucks, the Bulls. The Clippers have like maybe 3, 2.5 tough games the rest of the way.
The Spurs have the best record in the NBA of teams above 500.
Yeah. And look at them against... if you go and look at what they have, the other one was against the top 3 seeds. So that also includes themselves. So against Detroit, Boston, the Knicks, OKC, and then the Lakers, it's the best record against top 3 seeds, even though they are technically the 2 seed, a top 3 seed in their own conference.
One more thing, just to back up the Lakers point too. Before this whole little like Lakers, you know, purple patch or whatever we want to call it right now. Wasn't like the joke that like the Lakers were a litmus test whether you're a good team or not? Like, if you were a good team, you beat the Lakers, and if you're a bad team, you lost to the Lakers. That, like, I feel like 2 weeks ago we were saying that.
Yeah. I mean, and again, the clutch stuff that I was looking at, where it's like, man, they're winning 80% of their clutch games, and I was like, is that like a real thing, or is that just being a little bit lucky? But I'm still going to worry about their defense. I still probably would pick Minnesota in a playoff series if that's the first round matchup. That, you know, mm-hmm. but
yeah, I made that mistake last year. Won't make that again.
So no matter what, you would just pick Minnesota because of what happened last year?
I don't know. I guess we still have, what, another month left.
That one stung for a lot of people because the Lakers were like a hugely, hugely public team going into the playoffs last year. Hey, they figured some stuff out. And then Rudy Gobert, that was like the best week of his life.
That was like game one. I was like, oh, boy. This is not going to go well.
Yeah, I remember talking to Jay Billis. I was there and we were looking at each other. I go, I don't know how that's supposed to change.
Right.
I mean, you can get game ones can be the worst set of data points. You know, it can be completely misleading. It happens all the time where like a game one freaks all of us out, you know, and you've got nothing to go on except the game last night. And then you get to talk about it the next day. So I try to catch myself a little bit, but that game, and I was one of the only people that picked, I think I was the only person I saw that picked Minnesota. So I was a little tuned up for it, especially. And Billis and I were there inside the arena. And I just looked at him. I was like, I don't know why that's going to change. Like what's going to change about what's a very clear physical advantage that Minnesota has over the Lakers.
Billis coming on in 2 weeks. So look forward to that.
All right.
I got one more
that time we hung out.
Do we want to do it?
Well, we're at like almost 40 minutes already.
Yeah.
So why don't we tease it?
It's
you want to tease it?
Yeah, we can always do it in pods or something. It's kind of a joke one too, so we don't really have to do it.
Okay, that sounds like a great tease. Yeah, I mean, even last year the Lakers got game two, you know, at home after losing by 22 in game one, and then it was just. Game four was close. All right. That'll do it. Please subscribe to our YouTube page. A good 10 minutes. Went a little long today. Thanks to Saruti. Thanks to Kyle. Thanks to Tom. Thanks to Kevin. Check out the Ryan Russillo Show, our podcast, and subscribe. Barstool Sports.